The Boeing strike is contributing to a possible recession. Thanksgiving airline travelers may suffer sticker shock. And three mechanics may face manslaughter charges in an airline crash. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, October 21st, 2008. In the continuing chicken race between the International Association of Machinists and Boeing, analysts are beginning to express fears that the strike will last long enough to permanently damage Boeing and tear down the last of the major manufacturing industries still alive in the U.S. Boeing has an estimated order backlog of as much as 7 years' production and has orders for about 900 of its new 787 Dreamliners. That airplane is in hot demand as airlines look for ways to reduce fuel costs. But the company is also losing an estimated $100 million a day while the strike idles its plants, and there are rumblings among some customers that they may look elsewhere if delays continue to grow. With the strike now in its seventh week, the Washington Post reports the effects through the economy are already showing up in the U.S. government's trailing economic numbers. Last week, the Federal Reserve said the Boeing strike contributed to a 2.8% decrease in industrial production in September, the steepest drop in 34 years. That equates to as much as one-tenth of the nation's gross domestic product. Longtime industry consultant Wolfgang Demisch predicts the impact of the strike will be deeper than what we now see. Quote, "The world's airlines are on a buying spree. All of this essentially relies on sustained global peace and prosperity. It also relies on the global availability of relatively inexpensive credit," unquote. He likens the standoff between Boeing and the IAM to what happened in the U.S. auto industry. Quote, "It seems there is no learning taking place," unquote. The IAM is holding out for a contract which requires Boeing to allow union workers to bid first on any work before it's outsourced. Boeing spokesman Jim Prulks responds that the company cannot, quote, "lock ourselves into any agreement that wouldn't allow us to conduct our business in the most efficient manner possible," unquote. It's not just government bean counters who are seeing the strike's effect on the rest of the economy. Thousands of workers at outside suppliers and contractors have already been laid off or had work weeks reduced as their inventories bulge due to Boeing's shutdown. Some are reportedly burning through vacation and sick time to keep receiving full paychecks. At Spirit AeroSystems, where composite fuselage sections for the 787 Dreamliner are stacking up on rail cars, workers have ironically rallied in support of the IAM's stand against the very outsourcing that provides their jobs. The union has charged that delays in the development of the Dreamliner could have been avoided had Boeing performed that and other outsourced work in-house. The U.S. domestic airlines have said that returning to profitability will mean cutting flights which cater to leisure and vacation travelers. It's now becoming clear what that will mean for those seeking tickets to spend Thanksgiving with loved ones. USA Today reports the airlines will drop an average of almost 3,000 domestic flights per day during the 11-day period from November 20th through November 30th. That works out to 11% fewer flights and 2.6 million fewer seats than the same period 1 year ago. The paper obtained the figures through the Official Airline Guide, which compiles schedule information provided by the airlines. Some of the most startling cutbacks affect Thanksgiving Day itself, when, compared to last year, U.S. Airways has cut flights by 40%, Delta by 26%, and United by 22%. Now, if you're hearing this, chances are capacity cuts are not news to you. But for millions of would-be holiday travelers who don't follow the industry news, bookings for the upcoming holidays will be their first encounter with a new airline reality. USA Today reports hundreds of routes have lost a quarter or more of the flights they had last Thanksgiving, and some smaller cities have lost most or all of their scheduled airline service since last year. But there's always a silver lining. To well-positioned companies, a recession means opportunity. JetBlue and Southwest are both looking to increase market share at the expense of their competitors. JetBlue says it will operate 3% more flights this Thanksgiving season than last. Southwest has announced 15 added flights to cope with demand. The judge investigating the crash of Spanair Flight 5022, in which 154 people died in August, has called three mechanics for questioning on suspicion of manslaughter. Speaking on the condition of anonymity, a Madrid Superior Justice Court spokesman said Thursday that the judge had called the Spanair maintenance chief at Madrid's Barajas Airport, as well as two mechanics who checked the plane before it took off. On August 20th, the MD-82 crashed tail first, bounced three times as it skidded through a grassy area near the runway, then largely disintegrated and burned after coming to a halt at the edge of a stream. Investigators have suggested there may have been a problem with the plane's wing flaps, and the failure of a cockpit alarm to sound may have contributed to that crash. The pilot of a Lancair Legacy was killed and his wife critically injured when the aircraft crashed for unknown reasons Saturday afternoon in southern Utah. The Salt Lake Tribune reports William Phillips and his wife Janice took off from Parowan Airport bound for Las Vegas. Initial reports suggest mechanical trouble. Iron County Sheriff Mark Gower says it appears the pilot was trying to return to the airport when the plane crashed about 1 mile north of the runway at about 1:45 p.m. Mountain Time Saturday. The wreckage points to a nose-first, high-speed impact, but no fire. Janice Phillips was airlifted to a hospital in Murray, Utah, with broken bones and internal injuries, and was listed in critical condition. Her husband had been pronounced dead at the scene. Up next on ANN, Qantas flies its first A380 flight from Australia to the U.S. West Coast. NASA launches a probe to study the boundary of the solar system. And Boeing's satellite builders are counting on the TSAT contract. You're listening to Aero News.
Okay. Right up front, let me say that Garmin does not give tax advice. We have lawyers who cringe at the very thought of suggesting there might be tax advantages to buying a new Garmin avionics system this year.
Did he say tax advantages?
Could that be construed as tax advice, either express or implied? Yeah, like I said, lawyers. So I guess I won't be telling you that this year Congress is offering special bonus depreciation up to 50% in year one for qualified business equipment placed in service during 2008. Business equipment like, say, a new Garmin avionics stack. But you didn't hear that from me, right?
What did he just say?
Okay, better check with your tax consultant for guidance and your Garmin dealer for the installation. Garmin. Follow the leader.
See your tax advisor for guidance.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for October 21st. I'm Paul Plagg. Qantas became the first airline to operate commercial Airbus A380 flights between Australia and the U.S. West Coast, with a Monday morning flight into Los Angeles International Airport. The flight from Melbourne landed at LAX at about 7:30 a.m. Pacific time and was met by Qantas Ambassador-at-Large John Travolta and Australian entertainer Olivia Newton-John. Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa also greeted the plane, which carries the name Nancy Bird Walton, named after the 92-year-old Australian aviation pioneer. The mayor said the new service couldn't come at a better time. Quote, "International aviation at LAX generates $82.1 billion a year for the Southern California economy. The new large aircraft will usher in an era of international transportation defined not only by the size of the aircraft but their efficiency. The environment is about to experience the greenest, cleanest, and quietest transoceanic airplane ever built," unquote. The airline's first A380 service to London via Singapore is scheduled to start in January. NASA's Interstellar Boundary Explorer Mission, or IBEX, successfully launched from the Kwajalein Atoll in the Pacific Ocean Sunday afternoon. IBEX will be the first spacecraft to image and map dynamic interactions taking place in the outer solar system. The spacecraft separated from the third stage of its Pegasus launch vehicle at 1:53 p.m., 6 minutes after liftoff, and immediately began powering up components necessary to control onboard systems. The operations team will be checking out spacecraft subsystems during 45 days of orbital adjustments. IBEX will build an image of the outer boundary of the solar system from impacts on the spacecraft by high-speed particles called energetic neutral atoms. These particles are created when million-mile-per-hour solar wind encounters the gas of interstellar space. Scientists hope to learn more about the region, which shields the Earth from dangerous cosmic rays. IBEX is the latest in NASA's series of low-cost, rapidly developed small explorers spacecraft. A new generation of military communications satellites promises as big an effect on communications as GPS has had on navigation. And Boeing says it's out to win the contract to build the spacecraft called TSATs. Other bidders for the deal, which could reach $15 billion, include Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman. Lauren Thompson, a defense policy analyst with the Arlington, Virginia Lexington Institute, says the contract is essential to the continued operation of Boeing's satellite manufacturing complex in El Segundo. Quote, if it doesn't win the contract, it will have real difficulty sustaining the workforce, unquote. The first TSATs are scheduled for launch in 2018. TSAT would enable Pentagon strategists, field commanders, and soldiers on a battlefield to view the same video images of an enemy taken and transmitted by an unmanned spy plane. The system is said to offer 100 times more bandwidth than the current system, which is called MILSTAR. The LA Times reports Boeing's workforce of nearly 10,000 at its complex near LAX has been roughly halved by slumping sales of commercial satellites and lost contracts. 9 teams with rocket-powered vehicles will compete for $2 million in NASA prize money during this year's Northrop Grumman Lunar Lander Challenge. It's coming up this Friday and Saturday at Las Cruces International Airport in New Mexico. Teams will be required to fly their vehicles, simulating a takeoff and landing on the moon, and repeat the task in a limited period of time. The competition is a demanding test of navigation, control, and engine reusability. The Lunar Lander Challenge is one of 7 NASA technology prize competitions. The Centennial Challenge prizes are offered to independent inventors who work without government support, including small businesses, student groups, and individuals. Still ahead, Embraer celebrates the anniversary of its first plane. Massachusetts is selling off one of its aircraft. And welcome to the future of aircraft materials. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9922. Or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. One reason that they can say that is because of Clarity Aloft's flexible boom arm. This featherweight band is the same one sported by stage musicians and performers the world over. Balance and comfort are the result of its elegantly simple design. The mic boom is easily repositioned for eating and drinking during flight without disturbing your earpieces. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, October 21st. I'm Paul Plack. Embraer rolled out the restored second prototype of its vintage Bandeirante aircraft at a celebration to observe the 40th anniversary of the type's first flight on October 22, 1968. The plane has been carefully restored by current and former employees. Members of the design and build teams were on hand for the weekend event. The Bandeirante was oddly named after Portuguese colonial scouts who captured the indigenous people of the region for the slave trade. Development of the plane was carried out by what is today called the Aerospace Technology General Command. French designer Max Holste was tasked with creating an aircraft which was reliable and inexpensive to operate. By all accounts, he succeeded with the iconic twin turboprop. The construction of 3 prototypes resulted in the creation of Embraer on August 19, 1969. The second Bandeirante prototype originally belonged to the Brazilian Air Force. It first flew on October 19, 1969, in the colors of the FAB, which designated it as YC-95. That painting was redone in the same colors and shades, white with a blue strip in the middle and gray on the underside. It will now join the collection of the Santos Dumont Foundation in the city of Cotia, Sao Paulo. The Bandeirante, a.k.a. the EMB-110, was produced in military and civilian variants ranging from 15 to 21 seats until 1990. By then, the 30-seat EMB-120 offered higher speeds and a larger pressurized cabin. A recession is turning out to be a great time to buy used aircraft. Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick has become the latest state official to palinize his state's fleet. But don't look on eBay and don't look for a Citation or a King Air. The Gov is selling a 34-year-old Cessna 182. The state bought the plane for $22,000 in 1974. The Boston Globe reports it's been used so little lately that the governor himself has never ridden in it, and few state officials were even aware it was there, wasting away in its hangar at Norwood Memorial Airport. Clark Jessen, a spokesman for State Transportation Secretary Bernard Cohen, says the last logged hours were a year ago, when Airport Inspector Richard Bunker flew the plane for 3 hours to make sure it was still running. It's not clear what the plane will bring at sale, but it almost doesn't matter. The state is spending almost $28,000 a year to store and maintain it. That's right, costing more each year in upkeep than the cost of the plane when it was brand new. Massachusetts faces a budget deficit of $1.4 billion. A spokesman for the governor told the Globe, quote, "When the existence of this plane was brought to our attention, this decision was quick and simple. Sell it," unquote. Before I tell you about an incredible new material being readied for use in aviation and aerospace, let me take you back to the Aircraft Electronics Association's annual convention in April for these comments by former House Speaker Newt Gingrich.
The first thing I operate off of is a belief that we're going to get 4 to 7 times as much new science in the next 25 years as we got in the last 25 years. If we're going to get 4 times as much new science, a working group today trying to understand 2033 would be the equivalent of a working group in 1880 trying to understand today. It'll mean an explosive series of breakthroughs in materials technology. Nanoscale science and technology will revolutionize how we build things, and I guarantee you there will be aircraft flying by 2033 that are radically lighter, radically stronger, and stunningly different than anything we've seen up till now.
If you heard this at the time and couldn't figure out what in the world Newt was talking about, here's one example. The material is called Buckminster Fullerene, named after the early 20th century architect, inventor of the geodesic dome, and second president of Mensa. Buckminster Fullerene is also known as Carbon 60, but scientists call it Buckyballs for short, derived from its spherical molecular shape. Three scientists at Florida State University won the Nobel Prize for their work with the stuff back in 1996, and now a team at the Florida A&M University FSU College of Engineering in Tallahassee has figured out how to make a thin film out of it. Called Bucky Paper, the material is based on carbon nanotubes, and scientists believe it's the first step in producing aircraft materials which are 1/10 the weight of steel, but 250 times stronger and highly conductive of both heat and electricity. So far, the Florida State Institute has been able to produce Bucky paper with half the strength of the best existing composite material, known as IM7. Ben Wang, a professor of industrial engineering who leads the team, says, quote, "By the end of next year, we should have a Bucky paper composite as strong as IM7, and it's 35% lighter," unquote. The U.S. Army Research Lab recently awarded the researchers a $2.5 million grant, and the Air Force Office of Scientific Research added another $1.2 million. All I can say is, hang on, here comes the future. And finally, carbon nanotubes notwithstanding, sometimes metal means more. Helen Tilgner remembered that her father, who died in 1982, had fought in Vietnam and finished the war with a scar on his knee. She deduced that he must have earned a Purple Heart and set out to look for both his grave and that token of her father's service to his country. It wasn't simple. Armit Tilgner had served 6 tours of duty in Vietnam. When he retired after 20 years in the military in 1973, he went into the medevac business in Malaysia. When his helicopter went down in a storm there in 1982, his remains were buried there, and Helen never knew where. 5 years ago, Helen contacted Senator John Kerry, who helped locate her father's grave in Sarawak, Malaysia. Later, she found his discharge papers and got a big surprise. Armit Tilgner earned much more than a Purple Heart. The Associated Press reports that this past Saturday, finally, Helen and the rest of the family were presented by Senator Kerry with her father's Purple Heart, 4 Bronze Stars, 5 Army Commendation Medals, 3 Meritorious Unit Commendation Medals, 2 Valorous Unit Awards, and 136 Air Medal Awards. Kerry said he was stunned by the number of awards Armit Tilgner earned. But if Armit is looking down now on his family, all that hardware may mean less to him now than his 2 grandsons. 28-year-old Army Sergeant Jason Kendrick is scheduled to fly out for his 3rd tour in Iraq next month. 27-year-old Army Specialist Jared Kendrick returned from Afghanistan last May. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, we'll hear an update on the development of the A700 Very Light Jet from Jack Brawley of AAI Acquisition, which acquired the assets of bankrupt Adam Aircraft back in February. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCast. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.